You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Just as before, happy we'll be beyond the sea, and never again I'll go sailing, no more sailing, so long sailing, bye-bye sailing.
So if you were sailing to Sweden from Germany, where we were in the first hour, I guess you are technically correct, Keith. The fastest way would be to go straight across the Baltic Sea. However, you could take the North Sea, and then you just got to loop around Denmark, and then you can head it over there from the...
Yes, you could go through the Svalbard if you wanted to. But
anyway, you'll still get there, and we're there now, and it only took us 5 minutes' time. We were in Germany in the first hour as March Around the World rolls on tonight with Sasha Rossmuller now weighing in on behalf of Sweden, representing Sweden during the 2024 installment of TPC's March Around the World is our... good friend Henrik Palmgren. He was born in Sweden, the land of the Goths. As you know, Henrik is the founder and editor-in-chief of Red Ice. Don't miss a single episode on any of their programming
and
at Red Ice.
Our man in Stockholm, and we always have to ask him, has anything improved over in Sweden?
Well, let's start there. I was going to say don't miss a single thing that they do, he and Lana at redice.tv. But, how are we doing in Sweden tonight? But first, how are you doing, Henrik?
Very good. Good to be back, fellas. Nice to hear your voices again. Yeah, before we jump into that, I do want to say you definitely need to take the ride around Denmark because you got to see Skagerrak, Kattegat. I grew up there sailing on those oceans too, by the way. Two smaller oceans right by the west coast. That's the whole area for the Vikings, what that's named after. It comes from the name Viken, which is right between Norway and Sweden. Beautiful area, by the way. But anyway, that's a different story. We're actually doing pretty good, I gotta say, in Sweden. Last time I was on with you guys, has the rhetoric changed? Has attitude changed?
Okay, let's go.
I don't want to be always the perpetual white pillar. That there are black pills, obviously. Things are deteriorating. Things are getting worse. But as they're getting worse, more of our people are coming onto our side. More people are waking up. You see commentators now. You see mainstream, even conservative figures. They're talking about deportations being the only options to deal with the immigration problem in Sweden, things like this, like moderate party politicians. This is our version of the GOP, the conservative party, basically. So you have politicians doing op-eds in papers in Sweden now talking about that this is the only viable solution. They're upping the rhetoric. Everyone is getting aboard the like anti-immigration, stop immigration train, essentially, which is both positive. And there is a danger maybe by letting these people lead in these types of questions. And there is a danger that they will just keep talking about it and saying we have to do something about it, but they actually don't do it. But that will kind of turn people more complacent. Maybe they will still then continue to vote for the moderate party as opposed to, let's say, the Sweden Democrats or even a more radical party that will actually deal with these problems. But the point is, though, the cursor is moving in our direction. We're closer now than we ever have been. And that, of course, doesn't mean we should therefore be complacent and give up. That means we need to push harder than we have ever had. We need more people on our side. We need to up the rhetoric. We need to move in a direction now and strike while the iron is hot, so to speak, because it's a real opportunity. And I feel Sweden is leading in that department with terms of its nationalist groups that it has going. There's more active clubs than ever in Sweden. The Nordic Resistance Movement is doing good. The anti-immigration parties are growing. So, I'm positive, guys, to be honest. I'm very positive.
Well, I'd love to hear it. To hear it.
It proves the truth of late Senator Richard Russell's famous comment from Georgia during the Civil Rights Movement. He said that the sure cure for liberalism is a strong dose of Negroes. Well, or else...
Well, I mean,
yeah,
so
well,
are they getting
Arabs,
it there?
I guess, in Sweden. There's...
Yeah.
Right.
What's that?
No, are they getting that there? I mean, has it gotten to the point where – well, because, I mean, this is what's been interesting to hear you file this report, Henrik, is that – so this is our fourth week of this annual series, March Around the World. You were last on with us for this particular series. I believe it was 2 years ago. Last week, Dan Erickson
–
excuse me, last year, Dan Erickson was on in Sweden, and then Jonas Nilsson was also on, although he's in Estonia now. But yeah, and you didn't seem as bullish 2 years ago. So is the pendulum beginning to swing? I mean, you're saying yes. In Sweden, yes.
Yeah, I think so, to be honest. I think, and again, very, very complacent population, generally very more introvert, more tolerant, more silent. We stay quiet. We wait it out. We see what's happening. And that discontent is just growing among the average population. So everyone knows it. And so what I'm waiting for is the kind of that sign of really when like that final drop that makes the cup flow over, the straw that causes the camel's back to break, so to speak. That moment will come at some point. We don't know when that exactly is going to be. We don't know what event that will be, but it is going to happen at some point. And then when it becomes socially acceptable to be as much against immigration like the majority of people were for immigration just say, let's say a decade ago or so, that has actually changed now. You now see debate articles in the Swedish press where, contrary to 10 years ago, they now have to defend their position on why pro-immigration open borders is good. That wasn't the case. The default position was, of course, it's good. Now that's changed almost. I dare to walk out on a limb and say the even majority of mainstream papers understand that this is unsustainable. It doesn't really work. Everybody's looking for, you know, political solutions and solutions culturally within the population. What do we do here, you know, kind of thing. The danger, of course, is that you have conservative politicians stepping in, basically stopping integration, and then just to try to assimilate. And of course, from my point of view, and I think you guys agree with me here, we don't need integration. We need deportation. We don't want
you can't assimilate and to expand upon your metaphor about the straw that broke the camel's back. The other good metaphor from the Arab world is don't let so much as a camel's nose in the tent, because if you let so much as a nose in the tent, the next thing you know, the camel has moved into your tent and you've been moved out of it.
Let me ask you this. I was looking at while you were giving your last answer, I was looking at everyone who's appeared thus far in this series this month, and we kicked things off with Tom Sunic in Croatia. He said, you know, life in Croatia is pretty good. It's still one of the whitest nations in Europe. It's still center-right, et cetera, et cetera. Could be worse. Paul Fromm, Remy Tremblay from Canada, talking about the Online Harms Act. Looks like things are getting worse in Canada. Nick Griffin on from England, and then Keith Woods in Ireland talking about, hey, you know, the non-whites have swept all the leadership there on the British Isles. Drew Fraser in Australia, neither good or bad there, basically, from his perspective. But then tonight, Sasha Rossmuller saying he really does believe, like you, I mean, no naivete involved here. I mean, we've seen it all by this point. We're not jaded. We don't get too hot or too cold. We've been in this all of our adult lives collectively. Sasha's saying good things are happening in Germany, and that's just a fact.
Going to a Finnish conference soon, and it seems like there's a great awakening going on in Northern Europe.
Well, let me ask you, that was actually my next question. In Greater Scandinavia, Norway, Finland, Denmark, are they catching
the
fire
nations
like Sweden, or is it just a Swedish thing?
Sweden is always ahead of the curve, has been, both in terms of how it deteriorates, but then also, I think, in terms of how it leads when it comes to nationalist groups and things like this, right? So the Nordic resistance movement have, of course, a presence in many of these other Nordic countries as well. But Sweden has always led, for being a small country, very strong nationalist scene. It's always been the case there, right? But now it's ascending up the ranks slowly, you know, up the halls of power. We're getting more people picking up our talking points. And again, yes, it's bad. Like, we have at least one third of the population being foreign born. It's bad. But if and when the Swede decides to put their foot down and say, we've had enough, that's that. We're taking our country back. We don't even need 100% of the Swedish people on our side in Sweden. Imagine if you have 10%. I don't even know what the math that would be, but regardless, like, you know, let's say let's say 500,000 Swedes putting their foot down, pulling in the same direction, determination, willpower, discipline, convinced that we're going to turn this around. We can change the world. We can change our countries very, very quickly, to be honest, in ways we can't even imagine right now. And I'm seeing
you're reminding me of another. You're reminding me of another metaphor. Rudyard Kipling's famous poem, "When the Anglo-Saxon Learned to Hate." Apparently, when the Swede learns to hate, then we'll really turn a corner.
When that becomes the socially acceptable the position that we've tried everything else, right? We've been tolerant, we've been nice, we've done all these things. There's nothing else we can do now. And once that coin drops, anything can change, and it will change. That's what I'm
saying. One quick break with Henrik Palmgren of Red Ice, redice.tv. We've got him for just a few more minutes on the flip side. Getting good news tonight from Germany and Sweden as March Around the World rolls on. Stay tuned.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Always great to talk to Henrik, whether it's on one of the Red Ice family of programming or here on TPC. We've been collaborating with Henrik for a long, long time now. And in addition to his work at Red Ice, he is, of course, a family man. The husband to a Russian wife. We all love Lana. And the father to two little Vikings and one Valkyrie. They're doing it all, and they're doing it par excellence. And he's giving us the case in Sweden. And here's a headline. Henrik, for you is Swedish Open Borders MP makes complete U-turn. This is actually something you were bringing up, obviously, just in the last segment. I'm going to read here from this story. A Swedish member of parliament who advocated for open borders during the 2015 refugee crisis, so-called, said she has completely changed her mind and now wants to see a significant number of deportations. So her name is Louise Mayer, if I'm pronouncing that right, a lawmaker with the now governing moderate party, previously, quote, took a stand for openness, end quote, and supported the refugees welcome mantra, but now wants to pull up the drawbridge completely. I have changed my mind on the matter, she told Expressen. I guess that's a media outlet over there, obviously, adding she now supports an even stricter migration policy than the one I opposed at the time, end quote. The change that Sweden has undergone and is undergoing is fundamentally changing the country, she said, noting that mass immigration has been followed by several major problems. Now, this is, Henrik, I think this is entirely interesting. This is a member of parliament who, as recently as just a few years ago, within the last decade, was all for refugees welcome. Now she's saying she wants a strict restrictionist immigration policy. She wants massive deportations. This is what you were saying. Why now? Why now has this? I mean, we would have said they should have seen it.
Experience overcomes ideology.
Well, I mean, you would have thought that, 2015 they would have seen it. But why now is this happening? I mean, because this is, I think, a profound breakthrough when you have members of parliament saying, I was wrong and now I want the exact opposite of what I was advocating for recently.
Absolutely. The reason for this is that you have so many brave trailblazers that have risked so much into, getting us to this point of where we are now, right? Now they dare to turn around. It's safe now. This is what I'm talking about. It's okay to criticize it. This is a difference in mentality between, let's say, the American or even some, more continental European countries and the Swedish people, right? It needs to be kind of socially acceptable. That's one of the reasons why we got to this point, because basically it was a top-down pressure of, like, immigration is great, this is what you think, blah, blah, blah. All these media companies were saying the same thing. Internet wasn't readily available like it is now at that time. And so over many course of years now, I think we've managed to kind of turn the discourse over to this. And again, just the experience people are having out there in daily life and the crime and the shootings, bombs going off. It's chaos in the country. And so finally, we've gotten to this point where, like, okay, we've had enough, and it's now safe to say it, which is good, which is absolutely 100% what we need. However, as I said before, that means we also have to keep the pressure on these people, right? We can't just let them say these things and then just, like, let it go. They need to come aboard on our pages immediately. Now, don't drag your feet for another decade when it might be too late and say, well, we can't deport, I hope she's sincere about the deportation, right? But she did also mention this thing, we have to integrate people and stuff. And I say, no, deportation, not integration. That's where this needs to go. And she needs to get
assimilation
aboard
doesn't
our
work.
Talking points. No, it doesn't work. Absolutely not. It's been proven not to work. And again, even if it did work, it won't, luckily for us, right? But even if it did work, that's the last thing we want. We want to remain a unique, distinct ethnic group. We want to remain who we are racially. And to have these people, one day, if this continues, their children are going to marry our children, their grandchildren.
The homogeneity of the historic Swedish nation, I think, is working in your favor in this regard.
Yes.
You don't have all of this diversity that we have in America, for example, and it's much easier for the historic nation of Sweden, the founding stock of Sweden, so to speak, to speak up and with one voice.
And she did say here, this member of parliament, and go ahead, Henrik, and then I'll circle back to this very quickly, and then we'll move on. We only have a couple minutes.
No, again, I just want to say, I think you're right, Keith, in the sense that, yes, like, because of Sweden's history, longer history than America as it is, that is true. However, America hasn't been all that diverse all that time either, right? I mean, we know about the Naturalization Act going back to
70s. Not until 60s, like the 60s.
Like, 90% white.
60s. Exactly. It was a European nation. It was founded as a European colony. That's just a fact, right? So even that they shouldn't be able to hoodwink Americans into that. But yes, unfortunately, that has been easier to do for that reason because it's a more recent nation. But anyway, go ahead, James.
Well, I mean, just the diversity that America was intended for America was a European diversity.
Well,
it was not a diversity of mankind, which is
that's right.
What they want you to think.
Yep.
What people do in Europe, they ring the alarm bell when they get 20% of strangers in their midst, we would consider that a great advantage because we have 40% of those people here now.
Yeah. But they are saying here, another headline, Muslims will be the majority in Swedish cities in just one generation, boasts a Pakistani-born theologian. Subheadline reads, walking through the streets of Malmo is like walking through Baghdad. So there are certainly some Swedish cities there that have been blessed. I don't know if they've been blessed as much as Memphis, diversity. But
why do cities always have to be the the focal point of societal decay in almost every nation? I don't know.
Well, again, I mean, most of the Swedes, they live out in the countryside. We're connected with the soil, obviously. We like the trees and the mountains and the lake and the cold weather. And these people, they like their little pods living in these mega cities or, you know, these big cities, basically. And that's all the, well, where
the heat
they belong,
cranked
you
know up I mean? To 90 degrees or something Fahrenheit.
Well, you know, I actually thought that it would be a saving grace for Northern Europe, the fact that these people don't like cold. But I guess
that's
I
been your saving grace.
Well, I mean, they're still
there. Well, as long as the kids are there, that's the thing. Look, this is the other thing, right, which is ironically, in the chaos of everything that is converging right now, from the economy to the energy situation to the migrant situation, at some point the comfort is going to be cut off. At some point, whether it's an economic crash primarily first or that comes secondary or tertiary, we'll see what happens. But at some point, you're not going to be able to sustain these countries.
Just turn off the heat. I've got an advice right for the Swedes. Just turn off the heat.
Yeah, they'll go back to Africa. but this is the thing, Henrik. I mean, everything you're saying right now reminds me of the talk that I gave at American Renaissance, and that shouldn't be surprising at all because you and I think very similarly, obviously, and that is that what you said before was quite right. People like us have made it safe. All of those that have been toiling in the vineyards, taking all these slings and arrows, we've made it safe and fashionable. And now all over the world, you see, whether it's Germany, there in Sweden, or even here in the United States, amongst some factions of conservative incorporated, people are trying to catch up with the base.
Yeah, they're acting like they invented it.
Well, but now with this... This thing here with Louise Mayer, the member of parliament we were focusing on, yes, she did say that, you know, they're not integrating. If they would just integrate, that would be a good thing. But she asserted that integrating a large number of migrants has been a total failure and that deportation should be a real option. So, I mean, this is...
They'll assimilate when pigs learn how to fly.
Can there be real change here? I mean, this gets back to the whole crux of the thing. There are positive trends in Germany, positive trends in Sweden. Can it get to some concrete policy where we see a reversal of some of the things that have been going on the last few decades?
I think so. I'm convinced of it. And again, we have to keep pushing. Everybody has to be strong-willed here and you know, no surrender. We have to know what the score is there, so to speak. And again, other countries are doing this too. I mean, I think we can Pakistan that's deporting like a million Afghanis that's in the country. Like, there's all these other countries doing this. We would do it. We would be so nice and efficient. It would be very orderly and safe for everybody. We can make this a real comfortable experience. When we put our mind to it, no problem. You know what I mean? And I think it will happen. It must happen. There's no other
way. I'm getting excited here. These two guys, Sasha and Henrik.
It's like Betty Ford, you know, Gerald Ford's wife's famous anti-drug policy. Just say no. Just say no to immigration.
Well, I got to say this. I got to be sure because I told him I would, and I nearly forgot. Sasha wanted me to tell you a hearty hello from Bavaria. I know that y'all did a collaboration there on Red Ice a few months back now.
Indeed. Sasha is great. Yeah. Hi, if you're listening, Sasha. We'll bring him back on our show soon, too. He's a great guy.
He wants his beer drinking buddy Henrik back with him.
Hey, what are you talking about? We can
I'll
hang with him.
Meat.
Hey, Henrik, thanks so much for coming back on with us tonight, representing Sweden, the land of the Vikings. Man, what a glorious history they've got! It can be reclaimed. There ain't nothing like that Viking history, the Scandinavian history. I've got a very scant part of my genetic lineage traces back to that part of the world, but it's something that I'm proud of, and I know you're proud of it because that's your heart and soul. And so is there a future for the Viking stock, Henrik?
Yes, 100%. We're coming back, baby.
Hey, you take care. Best to you and to your lovely wife and your kids, and we'll talk again soon, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you, guys.
You too.
You do the same.
How about it? Hey, we got a two for two. Did we do a two for two so far? I keep shaking my hand after these two interviews. We never do that. Well, I mean, you know, not do the air like that. But he's so excited about the first two interviews. He's shaking hands and taking a victory.
We normally fight with each other in the brunch.
No, but seriously, good news abounds tonight.
It really does. People are waking up.
That's good news. You want to hear good news from places like Germany and Scandinavia.
Sweden.
Yeah, the Nordic countries?
The Great White North, as they used to call it.
Well, I thought that was Canada, but good news there right now.
Well, they're about the same latitude. How about that?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We're on the latitude down here in Memphis of, like, Libya.
Yeah, well like, what's his name, Jimmy Buffett said, changes in attitude, changes in latitude.
All right. We got to take a break. TPC's March Around the World. Where haven't we been? Is there any region we haven't been to yet? I don't know.
Well, we're going to find it.
We're not done yet. One more week. The Lord gifted us a fifth Sunday this month. Quite rare. We'll be back. Stay tuned. Okay. Surprise guest next.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Laura Winters. Former President Trump taking his social media platform Truth Social public next week, and he stands to make a lot of money, USA's John Schaefer reports.
The social media company founded by former President Trump is set to become publicly traded through a merger. Shareholders of Digital World Acquisition Corporation granted approval on Friday for the merger with Trump Media and Technology Group, the owner of the Truth Social platform. Trump's ownership in the new company valued at around $3 billion. I'm John Schaefer.
Meanwhile, Trump facing a Monday deadline to come up with almost half $1 billion in order to appeal his civil fraud judgment. New York Attorney General Democrat Letitia James is preparing to seize some of Trump's Westchester County, New York properties, including one of Trump's golf courses. USA's Dave Collins with more.
Trump faces a Monday deadline to pay his $464 million bond in a civil fraud case. Records show that James has formally registered judgments against Trump, the Trump Organization, and his two older sons in Westchester County, which signals Trump National Golf Club and the Seven Springs Estate may be at risk of being seized. Trump's lawyers say they can't find an underwriter willing to take on the entire amount.
Well wishes coming in from around the world as news breaks that Princess Kate being treated for cancer, the British monarch delivering an address Friday about how she and her family are coping and asked the public for time, space, and privacy while she is receiving chemotherapy. The princess, who is only 42 years old, describing in a video recording how she and her family are dealing with the devastating diagnosis.
This, of course, came as a huge shock. And William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
President Biden recently released a massive $6 trillion budget, the largest budget in U.S. history. And guess who pays the bill? That's right, you, the American taxpayer. American citizens and business owners will be paying more taxes. That's a fact. And if you owe back taxes, they will be coming after you to collect payments. In fact, President Biden also hired thousands more IRS agents to go after you. If you got a letter from the IRS and you know you owe back taxes or you haven't filed in years, don't put your head in the sand. Call us today. We've saved our customers millions of tax dollars. One quick, free phone call will show you how we can reduce your past tax bill and save you thousands. Guaranteed, or you pay nothing. Call now.
800-511-6046. 800-511-6046. 800-511-6046. That's 800-511-6046.
The Honorable Cause of Free South is a collection of 12 essays written by Southern nationalist authors. The book explores topics such as what is the Southern nation, what is Southern nationalism, and how can we achieve a free and independent Dixie. The Honorable Cause answers questions on our own terms. The book invites readers to understand for themselves why a free and independent Dixie is both preferable and possible. The book pulls in some of the biggest producers of pro-South content, including James Edwards, the host and creator of The Political Cesspool, and Wilson Smith, author of Charlottesville Untold, Arkansas congressional candidate and activist Neil Kumar, host and creator of the Dissident Mama podcast, Rebecca Dillingham, author of A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, Identity Dixies, Patrick Martin, and yours truly, Michael Hill, founder and president of the League of the South, as well as several other authors. The Honorable Cause is available now at Amazon.com.
Hey friends, James Edwards here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interest includes contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America, Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity, The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism, speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com. Certainly been doing some traveling during March around the world, and we are ticking off a lot of nations that make up
and pissing off a lot of people.
That's inadvertent, but definitely covering a lot of Western civilization and then some, wherever our brothers and cousins may find themselves living. We are trying to check the pulse of our people around the world. And, well, we've got a very special treat for you here now to close out this, our second hour. One more week in March Around the World next week. We have been all over the globe. And I hope you've had a great time crisscrossing the globe with us during our March Around the World. And if you have been enjoying it, you might be getting a little flight of fancy, those fancy feet. Maybe you want to take a trip of your own. We've got Harry Cooper now.
We've got a trip that is beyond compare.
Absolutely. Harry Cooper. Now, I know he's not from abroad, but we are working him in now because, boy, he's a traveling man, that's for sure. And he's going to provide you with details right now of a trip you might want to take for yourself. You've been enjoying March Around the World. Maybe you want to take a trip yourself. Harry's going to talk to us now about the Shark Hunters 2024 Southern Patrol. It's coming up a little bit later this year, this fall, right in time for Oktoberfest. What do you got for us, Harry, and how can people get on board?
This is absolutely awesome. And first off, if your listeners want to send me an email, it's sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com, and that'll get them our free Hotmail newsletter that comes out about every two or three days. As you know, you've been a member for how many years? God, way back.
Oh, and I think longer than I've been the host of the Political Cesspool. To be honest with you, I think I've been a member for longer than I have been the host of the Political Cesspool.
Were you actually on those submarines back then?
I wasn't on the submarines, but anyway,
yeah,
go ahead.
So sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com, and they'll automatically get the free almost daily news updates, plus they will be shown how to join Shark Hunters if they want to and get the monthly magazine, like you've been getting for years, and I will send them all the information about our 2024 Southern Patrol, which begins 21 September, and it goes through 5 October, which is 15 days, and we start out, of course, in München, which means place of the monks, and we have lunch at the Hofbräuhaus, which is where Uncle Adi used to have all his speeches. Hitler used to have speeches up on the third floor because it was a huge room and could seat 800. And so we go there, we have lunch, and they have a band playing, and then we go to, of course, Oktoberfest. If you've never been there, it is the most awesome street party you can imagine. It's huge. They've got hundreds of thousands of people there. We are inside one of the big beer tents. They've got, I think it's 8 beer tents. Each one highlights a particular beer, but only Munich beers. And the one we usually are in seats 6,000, and I'll bet you there's more than 6,000 in there, and everyone has a loud band, and they try to drown out the guys next to them. And a couple of years ago when we were there, the lead singer, a beautiful gal, at a break came down, and she came to my table, and we were singing Delilah, the old Tom Jones song. It'd be nice to say that she picked out of all those 6,000-7,000 people she came to visit with me, but actually her brother was sitting right next to me. People are just having such a great time. And when I send out the information about it with this new high-tech stuff, I'm embedding little 60-second-long clips of what we're doing over there so you actually see and enjoy what we're doing. So then after Oktoberfest, now I don't know which day is which, but then we go about 60 miles north to a town of Ingolstadt. But on the way, we stop at a fantastic air museum. It was a World War I Bavarian Air Force training camp, but now it's a magnificent museum. I'm looking at some of the pictures here right now. If you've ever heard of the Horton Flying Wing, they've got one in there. It was the world's first Delta Wing, a flying wing, stealth bomber jet-powered, and it was in service with Germany in 1944. Incidentally, the son and the grandson of Reimer Horton are members of Shark Hunters. But there's a flying wing there. And there's also an ME-262 jet fighter. And there's just God knows how many really great airplanes. Then we go on up to Nuremberg, where it all began. We go to the big stadium, of course. And right across the reflecting lake, whatever it is, not very big, there's what's called the Congress Hall, Congressahalle. That is built like the Colosseum in Rome, except it's so huge you could put the Colosseum down into the courtyard and still have plenty of room. And it was 3 stories high. It was going to have offices for all the Third Reich people there, but then came the war, and they had to pull the people out of there to go fight the war, and it never got finished. We go in there, and we have learned that Eingang verboten means shark hunters, come on in. So we go all sorts of places people don't normally get to go. And videotape your little heart out. There's also the place where the blood flag ceremony was. We go there. I'm scrolling. Then we base ourselves down in Berchtesgaden, which is that little town village, looks like it fell off a postcard.
Can you imagine this, ladies and gentlemen? Pardon this. I got to say, can you imagine? I mean, I know people who have taken this trip. Harry's been doing this for decades, these shark hunters trips. Yep. They say it is the most incredible trip they've ever been on in their lives. It was. Yep. It made their lives whole. I mean, can you imagine going on a trip like this with the experts, with the people who fought?
Look, I would call Harry an honorary German, but that wouldn't do it justice. He's about 3 degrees further into Germany than that.
Well, so continue on, Harry, and pardon that interruption, but folks, you have the opportunity to go there. You can go there this year, September 21st through October the 5th. Email Shark Hunters with an S, sharkhunters at sharkhunters.com, and that'll get you your email to Harry, who is the president of Shark Hunters, and you have the chance. I mean, we know, you know, if you listen to this program, and so many of you have gotten the Christmas incentive gifts the last couple of years, so you know what Harry's all about. I don't think we need to go back into all of that. He's made a lot of appearances on the program to talk about his history, the history of his organization, and why it's so unique. But what we're talking about right now specifically for March Around the World is you have the chance to march right on over into Germany with Harry Cooper and tour all of these places. So where were we? Where were we, Harry?
Walking
fell off
the
postcard.
Of time. We then go, we base for the last week in Berchtesgaden, and we go to the foundation of Hitler's Berghof, and I show people where his escape door was, which you got to know where it is or you ain't going to find it. There's also the foundation of what's called the Kampfhaus, which is where he and Hess stayed after they got out of Landsberg prison to finish the book Mein Kampf. And those of you who saw the movie Where Eagles Dare, we go in through that castle. We tour that castle. We go naturally to the Eagle's Nest. And everybody goes there. It's a magnificent place. And we have lunch there. But I show the people where the foundations still exist for the anti-aircraft guns, which you got to know where they're at or you ain't going to find them. And then we cruise on the Königssee, which is where Eva Braun used to, that's Brown, not Braun, Eva Braun used to sunbathe, sometimes in the nude. Then we have dinner at a restaurant that was open 75 years before Christopher Columbus left Europe.
How about that? Come on,
and
now.
You got to watch. James, you'd be in trouble over there. You're what, 6'1", 6'2"?
That's right.
You'd get a headache. Because this is built for people who are 5'8". So you got to walk bent over and you sit down.
It'd be fine for me.
Yeah. There's only two things on the menu. Nuremberg sausage fried, Nuremberg sausage boiled. They're little tiny sausages about the size of your little finger. I can't eat more than six of them because they're so rich. And we have a contest. Every year, anyone who can beat the Shark Hunter standing record, I'll pay for their dinner. And a new record was set last year, 43 of these things. And when Tom finished, he was a little green around the gills, but I paid for his dinner. And he didn't eat for a couple of days after that. And we spent a lot of time in Nuremberg, famous places. We also go into tunnels and bunkers that most people don't even know exist. One of them called the Deep Tunnel. You got to know where it is. You're walking along this narrow, narrow path in the forest. And when the path is only about 8 inches wide, and then it stops up ahead. You stop and wonder, what am I doing here? And then you look to your left, and here's this opening about 8 foot by 8 foot. And in we go. You go in about a half a mile. It takes a zig to the right, goes about a quarter of a mile, and then it stops because the war ended. This was going to be the escape route for Hitler to get into Austria. But like I say, the war ended, and he committed suicide, if you believe the propaganda, which is false. He got away, lived out his life in Argentina, but that's another story. Incidentally, you mentioned that publisher with all those books. Don't forget, we've got 62 books in print on Hitler, on mostly on the U-boat guys, on some of the flyboys. That's what sets Shark Hunters apart from anything else. All these great warriors were members of Shark Hunters. Otto Kretschmer. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, who's going ahead first?
Well, what I was going to say is this before you continue, because I would say this about you, Harry, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there is an American living today, perhaps not an American who ever lived, that became close personal friends with more members of the German military, whether it be the Luftwaffe or the U-Boat Waffe, than you did.
Right, the Third Reich military.
The Third Reich military than you did. And that goes back to the founding of... The founding of Shark Hunters over 40 years ago now. Let's go back 41. To the mission statement. 41 years ago.
You built a special bridge with those people, a special bond. They know that you really do care for them and love them and sympathize with their plight and situation.
That, here is the...
They networked me with everybody, and it was just incredible because they know I was telling their story honestly. I was a kid during the war years, and we knew Germans were all godless Nazis because that's what we were told. And then when I finally started meeting them, I thought, hey, we've been lied to. These are just normal people, patriotic to their country like I was when I joined the Air Force. And, you know, they were not raving Nazis. As a matter of fact, there were no Nazis at all in World War II. That was a propaganda term come up with by the Churchill government. They were Socis, NSDAP, National Socialist Deutsches Arbeitenpartei, socialists. So they knew themselves as Socis. And there were no German U-boats in the war. They were all Nazi U-boats. And we're tracking some people now. They've suckered some, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. They convinced some people to kick some big bucks out, and they took me aboard in November as the number one expert in the world on U-boat history, which I am. That's just a statement of fact. And they wanted me to help them identify the German U-boats, filled with treasure, of course, that are sunk in the waters of the Dominican Republic. And I told them there ain't none there. And we went back and forth. And they said, well, there's dozens and dozens unaccounted for. I said, no, they're not. So they sent me three sheets of paper with U-boat numbers on it. These are all unaccounted for. Well, I sent back and told them where each and every one of those boats was. And then they fired me. I wasn't going to get paid anyhow, so
that's
who cares?
The cost of telling the truth nowadays.
Well, but he's
I'm
been telling
that's the case.
Telling so, the truth. All right, go ahead.
They're on television now. They've had four sessions every Tuesday. They've got two more to go. And they've found all sorts of nothing. Nothing, not a damn thing that resembles German. Oh, they did find AI invented photos of black SS troops. It was part
oh,
of the secret, the secret black SS division from Haiti that was going to invade the United States from the
Hidden
Gulf
figure.
Of Mexico.
There's more black Confederates and astronauts every year, too.
But yeah, right, yeah.
I got to say that.
Where did
Very
they come
quick.
Up with this lunacy?
Well, I mean, there's
I
black
think,
Vikings.
I think it had to do with the high fever.
Black Vikings, and I mean, you know, it's all getting re-scripted. But anyway, I got to say this because we're running out of time. 30 minutes. I'll never book you again for 30 minutes, Harry. An hour's never enough. I should know better. But I got to say this. You wrote these books. U-Boat, which people got a couple of Christmases ago. When Eagles Soared, which is about the Luftwaffe, you wrote them, you edited it, you got their stories and you published it. These are their words, their stories. They wrote them for
that
you.
That is very similar to what we do with the people from the Civil Rights Movement and whatnot, the opposition.
All right.
No,
all right.
We provide
chapter,
a voice
each
for people.
Chapter is a separate standalone memory of a different veteran.
That
there
you
are
collected.
18 volumes of U-Boat. And there are three volumes of Where Eagles Soared, which is the Flyboys. But the U-boat, I knew the U-boat guys better. I knew more of them. Otto Kretschmer, the greatest of the war. I studied him when I was a kid in high school. And then I met him. We became friends. I've spent I don't know how many times at his home. I had a sleeping room there. He said I was a member of his family. The greatest submarine commander of the war. He was just a normal guy like everybody else.
All right. Yeah, and then so many of them were, and we know that through your work, your research, your life.
They were patriotic Germans.
So the 3-point mission statement of Shark Hunters, number one, to tell the honest, true, and accurate history. of these men who served honorably without propaganda theories, guesses, fairy tales, or half-baked commentaries. Number two, to restore the dignity and pride of these brave and honorable warriors that you got to know personally, up close and personally, in their homes, overseas and abroad. Number three, to bring former enemies together as friends. This, your work, Harry, your book, your books,
yep,
received a remarkable endorsement from Admiral Kelso, the former Chief Naval Officer of the U.S. Navy. I mean, that is a remarkable thing. That was when, you know, you still had people who could think clearly and for themselves. But here's the point, and we're running out of time.
No, he wasn't transgendered, by the way.
No, no. I mean, this was the real deal.
We don't do transgender.
So that's the mission. It has won remarkable mainstream support, if I may. But what we're talking about right now and our theme of March Around the World is that you could march right over there to Germany, and on the 2024 Southern Patrol with Harry Cooper, you'll be with a lot of members of Shark Hunters. You'll be also there with two of the world's absolute top experts on the history and the construction done by the Third Reich in the area that they'll be visiting. You've said before, Harry, you can't take a bad picture. You can't have a bad beer. You mentioned some of the places they'll be going to, but obviously the places they'll be going to in Germany with you over the course of that two-week period between this September 21st through October 5th going to have heavy emphasis on the German war years of World War II. How can they sign up? What does it take? What do they need to do?
Like I say, just send me an email, sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com. Say you heard it on the show. I'll just send you all the information you need, and it's all free.
Well, I tell you what, we need to put you in touch with Sascha Rossmuller, who we had on the show from Germany. I think he would be someone that would like to contact you and vice versa.
Well, yeah, Sascha is running for a seat in the European Parliament on the former NPD ticket, now called the Homeland. Oh, yeah. He's in Bavaria. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, but listen, here's the thing. So you have a chance to go to Germany with Shark Hunters. How many years have you been doing these patrols, which is what you call these trips to Germany?
Yeah, well, it was my friend Hans-Georg Hess who said they were patrols. He was the youngest combat submarine commander of the war, possibly ever in history, 21-year-old kid. 1987, we started in Key Largo because I lived in Chicago and wanted to get out of the cold. So it was February. And Hess, that's the first time I met him. When we were leaving, he says, "And next year you must come to old Germany." I said, "Well, what? I've never been out of the U.S. And then I thought, "Hell yes!" So we went over there. they just
home of good beer.
Yeah, good beer, of course. But they came. Hundreds of U-boat veterans came to be with us, and our farewell dinner. There were 10 people to each table, round tables. And I said, "I don't want all the Germans here and all the Americans there." So they sent them one American, a German, American, a German, and they were singing, and arm in arm, and I'm standing at the back of the wall, at the back of the room, and I'm thinking, how could we have ever shot at one another? But
that's a damn good question.
Damn,
been manipulated by you know who.
Yeah. I know.
Well, I mean, this is it. So, I mean, you know, and over all those years, these reunions, these trips started in 87, all these years, you know, as their numbers dwindled, these German World War II veterans still came out to meet and greet and break bread and have drink with the Shark Hunters veterans. You have a chance to go over there with Harry Cooper, take this two-week tour of Germany. A lot of people go. People I know go. They say it's the best trip they've ever taken. Sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com. And you can get the information. And when's is there a deadline to sign up for this trip? And we're here in March. This is a trip in September. Any final details? We've got about a minute left here.
Yeah, the deadline is when the last person signs out. We've got only so many seats on the bus. And when the last guy signs on, then the next guy is, "Well, sorry, pal. Wait till next year," like the Chicago Cubs. we've got guys on this particular trip that are signed up that have been with us 6 and 7 times already. And not just from the U.S. There's the big Viking dog. He's coming from Norway. And we usually have people from many different countries. And it just everybody gets along great. Everybody, well, if you like beer, it's the best beer in the world. My Irish granddad is probably turning over in his grave because I don't drink beer. I don't even drink booze anymore. Back when I was a professional race car driver, I drank a lot, but I gave all that up.
You drink and eat little bitty sausages.
Yeah, right. No, but they have some of the greatest ice cream sundaes over there. My blood sugar takes a terrible hit.
Hey, Harry, let me ask you this, Harry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the music's about to start. You know, you're going to all of these places of significance to the World War II Germany era. Do people look at you astonished, or, you know, as if something's going wrong, or are they okay with it? I mean, you know, when the rubber meets the road.
Or do they feel a real bond with you?
Music
oh, yeah.
Playing.
We get along fine with everybody over there. The only people that take exception to what I do are the spitlickers, as we call the Southern Poverty Law Center. They don't like me.
Very, very good. Well, folks, sharkhunters.com is the website. That is a shark, as in great white. Shark Hunters with an S. Sharkhunters.com. I'm a member.
All
love
one
Harry
word.
Cooper. Take a trip. Final word to you.
He's one of a kind.
5 seconds, Harry. Last word to you.
We welcome everybody. Send me an email, sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com.
No spitlickers allowed.
We're marching around the world on the radio. You can do it with Harry Cooper and Shark Hunters. Visit all of these sites of World War II significance in Germany with the people who fought it. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.